Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Leap, your host for Just the Best Literature. Hey, welcome to our first program here on KPCG.FM. Before we get into today's program, I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about myself. Certainly you want to know who I am and why you should listen to me. Well, I have a bachelor's degree in English literature and a master's degree in library and information science. Now, what does all that mean? Well, as an undergraduate, I focused my studies in 18th and 19th century English poetry, and I also studied 20th century American authors. Also, as part of my undergraduate degree, I concentrated on poetry writing. Now, for my master's degree, I concentrated on resources and bibliography, which is kind of just a fancy name for becoming a reference librarian. I was trained to do research for, let's say, the geology department, or trained to do research for the chemistry department. I mean, I was trained to be like the book hound that went and hunted things down for people. But during my career of 40 years, and really it just seems like yesterday to me, I've been an assistant director for a 9-branch county library system in the Pacific Northwest. I worked for Westinghouse Electric Corporation for 14 years. I worked in their information services department. It was in that department I served as a technical writer. I was also a technical librarian. I was the assistant director of the corporation's technical communications committee. I really had the opportunity to travel all over the United States with that job. And then I was also a ghostwriter for company executives, and that means some of their presidents. Hey, but what am I doing right now? Well, I'm senior writer and editor for the Philadelphia Trumpet magazine, also the Royal Vision magazine, and both of these magazines are produced by the Philadelphia Church of God. You could read my articles if you'd like on thetrumpet.com or at thetrumpet.com and also at pcog.org. I also teach English language literature and Shakespeare here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. And most important of all, I'm Irish, which gives me the gift of gab. I would like you to consider this program as, well, the biggest international book club you could ever become a part of. But here's the real benefit. There's no membership fee for you. However, I am going to ask you to buy some books. I'm also going to ask you to read some books, because on this program, we're going to talk books. We're going to talk classic fiction. We're going to talk current fiction. We're going to talk current books on social issues. We're going to talk essays. We're going to talk magazine articles. We're going to talk about books on history. We're going to talk about biographies. And we're also going to talk about my favorite, poetry. Hopefully that doesn't sound boring to you, because poetry is really great stuff. But remember, the whole program is going to focus on only those books or those articles or that literature that is the best for you. The best for you to develop your thinking. The best for you to develop your conversation skills. And even the best for you if you're interested in writing yourself. So I think it's going to be very exciting. And as we progress, I think you're going to get more excited about it. And here's what I'd like you to do for me. If you like what you hear on Just the Best Literature, I want you to go tell your friends. I want you to get together with them, listen to the program, sit back and relax, get a cup of coffee or tea or whatever you drink in the morning, and I want you to feel like you can join the conversation. But here is the only thing that I require, and that is you're going to have to start reading. Even more, I want you to start developing the habit of reading and love it. You know what this means? This means you're going to have to turn off your television and start reading. This means you're going to have to stop going to so many movies. This means you're going to have to get off your iPad or your smartphone and start reading. And I want you to read books. I want you to just take the book in your hand. I want you to be able to touch the pages. I want you to be able to smell it. I want you to be able to have an experience with it. And all of that brings me to the subject of our very first program. Let me tell you what I've been reading lately. Here's the title of the book. Its title is Lit Up, One Reporter, Three Schools, 24 Books That Can Change Lives. And it's by author David Denby. Now, Denby is a staff writer, and he's a former film critic for The New Yorker. His reviews, essays have appeared in The New Republic, The Atlantic, and The New York Magazine. So, like me, he's been around a while, and he's been writing quite a bit. But the reason he wrote this book is he is really concerned about what is happening to teenagers, especially those between the ages of 17 and 18. And what he's discovered is teenagers at that age just do not like reading. And in fact, one teenager told him, books smell like old people. So he's done some research, and in fact, what he did was he took some time off, and I want to save why he did this for a later program on this same subject. But he took some time off, and he actually went back to high school. And he went in, and these are three schools in the New York City area. They would be considered top schools, and he actually went back to the 10th grade, because this is the age of like 16, 17, 18-year-olds. Maybe it's a little bit younger. But he went into the best schools, and he wanted to find out how the teachers were getting these young people interested in reading, to get interested in reading so much that they actually loved it. And in fact, the ultimate thing to try and get teenagers to do is to actually find pleasure in reading books. Let me just give you a good statistic here that he brings out in his book, and I'm going to quote him here. He says, he writes, a Pew Research reading survey conducted by telephone in 2014 reported that 46% of teens 16 and 17 said they read a book, including books for school, every day or almost every day. Now, you may think that is a really good statistic, but it's not. And here's what he says. Since almost all the respondents at that age are students, 46% is not an impressive number. In other words, all these students are in school. They're in 10th grade English classes. They're required to read books. And if only 46% of them are reading books, what are the other 46% doing? So he tells you another statistic. Denby also says, a recent summary of studies cited by Common Sense Media indicates that American teenagers are less likely to read for fun at 17 than at 13. So to help me today discuss this problem and how, well, you can remedy it and how I could remedy it, I have two teachers here with me. I have Leanne Brandon, who taught 5th and 6th grade at our Imperial Academy here on the Herbert W. Armstrong campus. She also homeschooled her own children for 21 years. She has three wonderful children who I know love reading. And I also have James Brandon. And yes, he is related. He's her son. He has been taught by her and, of course, his father. But he also works here at Imperial Academy on the campus. And he teaches 7th and 8th grade English as well as 10th and 12th grade English. And so these two teachers have had incredibly good success in developing the habit and love of reading in their students. And so I believe parents, they can give you some really good tips. So let me pose a question to the two of you. How do you get screen-loving teens to develop the habit of reading books and then really love it? Leanne?
Well, that's a really good question, and it really goes back to example, even as teachers and as parents. When the students come into the classroom, the best thing for the teacher is if the student already has a love of reading because it's been developed at home. But in the classroom setting, one of the greatest things that we can do is to bring reading aloud into the classroom every day, more than once a day, not just the students reading aloud, but also the teachers reading aloud, because the students need to hear books, they need to hear words expressed, and when they do, it actually encourages them not only to develop the skill of reading, but to develop the love for it.
You brought out several important points that Denby brings out, and I just wanted to say to our listening audience here, I don't believe you've read his book, have you?
No, I have not.
Okay. I don't think either one of you have. It's just really a brand new book just off the shelf. But the one point that he makes, and I think it's very important that parents listen to this, is he considers this problem with teens not loving reading or not even wanting to tackle, let's say, reading a hard book, he does see that as a parental problem. Mm-hmm. It's not the school's problem. It's not the media's fault. It's not Apple's fault for making an iPad. You know, it's not Apple's fault for making the smartphone. It's the parents are not doing the job of reading to their children. And so it's really great that you bring that out. Also, I think one point that he brings out in the book that's very interesting, he goes back, well, to the same time when I was in school. Maybe I'm even a little older than he is, but I do remember, you know, growing up in the 1950s. Now, that's, what, a whole century ago, I guess, or the 20th century. And I remember our teachers reading to us in school, and we couldn't wait for it. I mean, we looked forward to it. I also remember that we had to memorize parts of what we read. We had to memorize little poems, and we had to memorize, parts of books. But also, I remember in reading class, we were encouraged to read out loud.
Yes.
And you just brought up all those three points. So I think that's really good, and I think it's just kind of like these are the fundamentals that our society has gotten away from.
Right.
Maybe one other thing that you can talk about is how you got, these are 5th and 6th graders. In other words, right. These are, I would think, from the age 11 to 13. So they're still at the good age where they actually love reading. So I know that you developed a program called Tea and Poetry. So mm-hmm. How did you get your students interested in poetry?
By offering tea. No, it was more than that. But, I mean, that was definitely part of the incentive, was to make it an experience rather than just, you know, a one-dimensional activity. So it was my small attempt, Poetry and Tea, which we did once a week. It was a Wednesday activity. The whole intent behind it was to actually just foster a little bit of interest so that when they moved into the upper levels in middle and high school, that the teachers would have some kind of fertile ground to work with. And so it was more just a wetting the appetite, wetting the sponge so that it would soak up more as they moved on up. So I would encourage them to bring in books of poetry that they might have at home. We would share that. We would always read them aloud. Sometimes it was funny. Sometimes we used accents. We wrote poetry. We studied different lives of different poets and their work, of course, at that 5th and 6th grade level, so we were able to discuss Shakespeare just a little bit, and I had several students who came into the classroom saying Shakespeare's boring, and by the end of doing this poetry and tea, and also we did read some books that referenced Shakespeare, just historical fiction, so by the end of it, they were looking forward to studying, you know, some of those literary works as they moved on up, because they just had enough but did not have so much that it actually kind of was boring to them at the age level that they were at.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring out the aspect of experience. And again, that's where Denby really gets into some really good description. He gets into because there's a really very creative teacher, and I'm not going to necessarily give the names out here, but he talks about a very, very creative 10th grade English teacher that was trying to get some of these young people, let's say from Harlem and from, you know, some of your rougher neighborhoods, to actually read Nathaniel Hawthorne. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember having to read Nathaniel Hawthorne, and I know it was a challenge to read it. But the reason she got these children or these young teenagers into it is she did make it an experience, and she made them get into it. Like, for example, he talks about how she taught the Scarlet Letter,
right?
And she would dress up in pilgrim costume, mm-hmm, with an A on her chest, and then she actually, I think it was, if I'm getting the example right, she actually got one of the students to dress the same way, and she was holding this baby doll and made her stand, you know, on a chair, and then she gave parts of the books to all the different children in the room or the teens in the room, and then she made them act out the parts of the characters in the book, and it just made the book come alive. So by the end of the segment, they just wanted to read more Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Right.
So I think that's really important that parents get that is, you know, it's just not you're never going to make any headway with your young people or your young children if you hand them a book, send them to their room and say, go read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not going to work that way.
No.
So I wanted to bring James online here and talk to James because we've had a few little talks about you know, reading books. Some of the books that I do teach in English language literature, I teach sophomores in college, and we do cover some of the same books like The Old Man and the Sea. And I was asking him one day, well, what's your discussion like on Old Man and the Sea? And I'll just let them tell you what you told me, if you can remember that.
Yeah, the hard thing with teaching that age range, 12 to 13, They love reading, and I get a lot of, you know, ones that have even come through my mom's class. We almost just overlap there at Imperial Academy, but some of the children that I teach came through, you know, her program. They're used to the tea poetry and things like that, and they love reading. But one thing that is hard for a lot of them, and it's hard as a teacher to try and get those things out of them, is discussion about the depth in anything, and. That's what I like to do. I think that's what you can do with a lot of good books is really break them down and approach them for more than just a surface understanding. And that is a challenge for those seventh and eighth graders. But I think it's a good challenge because they often can approach books and literature and reading as similar to the same way that we might approach, you know, eating sweets or cookies or things like that. It's a thing that you do that is fun and it's light and it's entertaining, but there's more to be gotten from books and from literature than just the you know, the surface enjoyment. And I think that if you can teach them that you know, to dig a little bit deeper, to think a little bit deeper about what it is the author's trying to say. Is he trying to make a deeper point? Are these things symbolic? You know, can they relate to things in your own life? There's a maturity that helps you understand that. And if I can help develop that in them, they'll get a deeper level of enjoyment out of that reading than just, oh, this was a fun book and it amused me.
Right, that's interesting. Denby brings out in his book, and it really struck me, and I think this is more just natural with us and our family. My wife Deborah, who also teaches at Imperial Academy, and she teaches at Herbert W. Armstrong College, but she taught seventh grade right before James did, and but just reading was just a part of our lives, and conversing about the books was a part of our lives. And it was a part of our children's life. And Denby brings out that a lot of teens, let's say as they grow older, they get more well, they've turned more inward to themselves. And if they read books, they're going to identify with the characters. And they may not like the fact that the character is going through something that they're going through. So to get them to discuss a book is to get them to really open up themselves. Mm-hmm. And they don't like that. And I think the thing that's a really good point here for parents is if you encourage your children to read and you're reading the same books along with them, you can find out about your, you know, like what's really going on in there. And I just think that's an expert, just an excellent point that Denby makes in his book. And he did watch this teacher just bring out these kids, bring out what was really going on in their minds. And he actually said that he wanted to use books to help develop their character. Continue on now with the 10th and the 12th graders. What's your challenge there with them?
The challenge there is that a lot of them, with the way that the school has worked, some of the younger students, the 11, 12, 13, 14-year-olds, they've sort of come through the program for several years. With a lot of the higher grades, the 10 through 12, a lot of them are coming in from much different schooling backgrounds. Some of them have been in IA for a while, and so they're kind of used to that more emphasis that we put on books and literature and reading. And some of them don't. They come from, you know, various different private schools or homeschooling or public schools. And so they don't have quite the same level of exposure that they will get at Imperial Academy. And so it is actually harder with the older ones. I have less of them that are really into books. With a lot of the younger ones, they're still at that age where they don't care so much about what is cool or, you know, what is seen as the cool thing to be doing. And with the older teenagers, and they're still developing their interest and getting into different things, but their peers don't read books. That's not a thing that their age is really seen as doing. Even, I mean, you can see that from some of those quotes from Denby that you've read. And so it's a little bit harder to pull them along, especially with some of the things that are not as immediately accessible to them, like Shakespeare. You take somebody that doesn't have any experience with literature, or not much experience with literature, and then say, here's Julius Caesar, here's Hamlet, here's King Henry, or Henry V, or King Lear. And they're just overwhelmed, and it's too much for them. And they don't have that sort of experience. If they're not reading already, they don't have that experience of, well, this is just another book. I read books all the time, and this one's a little bit more difficult than some of the other ones, but I'll get through it. It can be a very overwhelming thing for them. So it's a responsibility for me and something I have to get creative with. How do I pull them in, and how do you really get them involved and make them like what they're reading and understand it? And like you brought out with the example of that teacher who was going through Nathaniel Hawthorne, we do much the same thing. I mean, I haven't come in dressed as a pilgrim yet, but we act it out. We assign everybody parts. That's very easy to do with Shakespeare because it is a play. And I've found that especially with the Shakespeare, once they understand what's going on, they like it. The reason that they don't like it, the reason that they sort of come into class saying like, oh, I don't like Shakespeare, Shakespeare's boring, is because they don't understand it. And so when we break it down and we go over it, and before we are done with a play, we'll read it three or four times. And by the time it's over, they understand what's going on, and they've sort of gotten their head around the way that Shakespearean language works. And then they start to understand, this is really funny, or this is very clever. I like things about this. I identify with these characters. This character is, really interesting to read. And that's when they start to latch onto it. That's sort of the challenge that I have to deal with.
Yeah. One other thing I might say about James is that he not only has what we call brick and mortar students. Those are students that live right here in Edmond. He also has students online that take his class live online. Now that must present a challenge as well.
It is. There's a lot of inherent challenges with dealing with students that are online. I mean, technology is amazing, and it's amazing what we can do, what we do on a daily basis. I try to always take a step back from that and just appreciate the fact that we are able to do what we do with the online students. That said, there's still limitations. And, you talked about teenagers that are just constantly staring at a screen. And that's the unfortunate side of having people do a school online, is that you've got them staring at a screen. And so
all day.
And when they get the chance to go through a book, that gives them a chance to sort of take a break from that screen as well, even if they're still, on camera in a virtual classroom with us. But it certainly, I think, is harder for them to feel a part of the experience. When I take something like Shakespeare and we go through and act it out, I mean, when I covered Shakespeare in high school, we were all in the same room together. And like you said, we could act out scenes together, and we could come to class, in costume and things like that. You can't do that with online students. And in some classes, I have more online students than I have students in the class physically with me. And so that does present a creative challenge for me of how do you engage these people? How do you get them involved and make them feel like they're a part of this? And, we use, we're in a virtual conference room, if you will. And so I can get them on camera and things like that. But it is a challenge, and they have to work at it, and I have to work at it. And, it's difficult.
So what do you both think that parents can do? Maybe if you could give a few examples of, parents need examples. They need suggestions. They need some direction on what to do. And of course, we're going to announce at the end of the program. We are going to be on Twitter. We do have our own special email address. People will be able to ask questions and make comments. And so this is going to be an interactive program. That's what I want it to be. But James, we could just start with you. What do you think parents could do for their homeschool teens to make sure that they're getting into books and really loving books? What could you give them? What advice could you give them to help them?
I think what you have to do is revolve it around memories. If you can create good memories around something, then your kids will latch onto that. When I think about my own personal experiences, reading was not anything that I was ever forced to do. There were good memories involved in that. You curled up in the corner, or we'd light a fire and we'd all sit in the living room reading our books, or perhaps we had one book and we were passing it around or reading it out loud or things like that. And I know that might sound really dorky and weird and incredibly nerdy. Perhaps it was, but those were good memories, and there was value in that. And those are the sorts of things that kids take with them, and they remember that. And it becomes a comfort thing. And they're the people who are readers. They like to, it's a rainy day. Oh, I need a cup of tea and I need a good book, because that's sort of the association there. So when you associate it with this is hard slog and it's a classroom and it's boring and, it's work, then that's a negative association. So as a parent, find opportunities to create positive associations with your kids with reading and books in general.
So that means parents have to already have that attitude themselves, that they love books and they love reading. And that's the experience we had.
Yeah.
In fact, my wife and I, our favorite activity was to go on vacation, go to a beach, buy the same book, read it, and then we discuss it at night. We'd read on the beach and then discuss it at night. And we have a lot of fun memories of that. Okay, Leanne, we're running close on time, mm-hmm. but you're here representing the 13 and unders. What can parents do to help them?
Well, I think that you have to establish the pattern before they're even old enough to be reading themselves. So it starts when they're very, very young, reading to them. But I think what may happen is once a child learns to read, parents feel like they've sort of mission accomplished. And that may be why we're finding that come teenage years, they're less interested, because maybe the parents are showing less interest with the child in reading. And really, it has to continue all the way through their formal education. We have to make it a family activity, and it has to be a daily activity, even if it's only 10 or 15 minutes a day, and include discussion over the dinner table, you know. Yeah,
that's a very good point. I was just talking with Mrs. Roberta Wood, who is, she taught kindergarten here. She's actually retired from teaching as well. But she said she read to her boys up into their 18, 19, 20 years old. They would say, "Mom, could you read this book with us?" And, of course, then they would discuss it. And so I think that's really important. Well, thank you both. We're running out of time for our panel, but thank you for coming. And you can be sure I'm going to invite you back in the future. So we'll just go with that. So thanks for coming.
Thank you.
You're listening to Just the Best Literature with Dennis Leap on 101.3 KPCG.
Just to wrap up the discussion we had on the program today, I'd like to read a quote from an article titled, "I'll Start Reading Paper Books Again." It's by Leisha Bushak. It's from the website Medical Daily. And here's what she writes. It says, "A recent study out of Harvard University found that reading an e-book before bed lessened the production of an important sleep hormone known as melatonin. As a result, people took much longer to fall asleep, experienced less deep sleep, and were more fatigued in the morning." Now here's a quote from the study. "The light emitted by most e-readers is shining directly into the eyes of the reader, whereas from a printed book or the original Kindle, the reader is only exposed to a reflected light from the pages of the book." Charles Seisler, lead author of the study, told the BBC, "Sleep deficiency has been shown to increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, metabolic diseases like obesity and diabetes, and cancer. Thus, the melatonin suppression that we saw in the study among participants when they were reading from the light-emitting e-reader concerns us." Now, Leisha goes on to say, "In contrast, reading an old-fashioned book can actually help you sleep better. By taking your mind off the things that you may normally stress about before falling asleep, a book can clear your mind and also make you sleepy, easing you into a full night's rest. In addition, soft light being reflected off the pages of a book doesn't signal to your brain that it's time to wake up like the glaring screen of an e-book or an iPhone." And so I just thought that's a great quote to pass on to you. Now, for the program, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to continue our discussion of the importance of reading. But next week's program in particular will discuss how to ensure your infants and toddlers and your young children acquire the reading habit. The final program on reading, we're going to focus on why you as an adult, why it's important for you to be reading. Also, as I told you at the beginning of the program, we're going to talk books, and I want you to read books. So the first book that I want you to read, and we'll be discussing on the program, it's one of my favorites. The title is The Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway. You can certainly pick up a copy at Amazon. You can check your local library. It's really not that expensive. I think you can find a copy for about $4. It's just a short book, but it's really easy to read, and it's really jam-packed with a lot of material for discussion for young people, for teenagers, for young adults, and for older people. So get the book and start reading. If you'd like to get in touch with me or contact me, you can write to me with any questions or comments at jbl@pcog.org. And you can follow me or follow Just the Best Literature on Twitter at jbliterature1. Thanks for joining me today. Until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.